Welcome to Tech News Briefing. It's Thursday, May 30th. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. Researchers are working on bandages that could allow doctors to monitor wounds and deliver treatment. We'll find out how these smart bandages work and when they could be available. And then, the Pentagon is opening up about the potential risk that hostile nations could use weapons in space to engage in warfare. Our aerospace and defense industry reporter Doug Cameron will join us to talk about what the military is doing to prepare for potential threats. But first, today's bandages are usually simple constructions of gauze and plastic or latex. Their main job is typically to apply pressure or hold a cream or ointment in place. But a new generation of smart bandages could allow doctors to remotely monitor wounds, decrease scarring, and speed up healing. Smart bandages are part of the burgeoning wearable tech industry. Their development has been fueled in part by funding from DARPA, the research arm of the Defense Department, which announced in 2019 it would put $55 million towards the development of bioelectronics to help wound healing. Elizabeth Cohen wrote about this for the Wall Street Journal, and she joins us now. Elizabeth, what would these bandages look like, and how would they work?
They might look very similar to the bandages that we use now, but they will work in a completely different way. So the bandages we use now, Zoe, it's the same bandages our mothers used, our grandmothers used, our great-grandparents used. They are old. So what would be different is that inside the bandage, you might not even be able to see it, would be electronic circuitry with sensors that can tell if the wound is getting infected. They can test for pH levels. They can detect moisture. They can detect all sorts of other things, temperature. And that lets the doctor know if the wound is getting infected. And what's really cool about this is that then that circuitry talks to your doctor. You can be in your own home. And it tells the doctor, wait a minute, something's going wrong here. And then the doctor can activate the circuitry to give a zap of electricity, because that can help things heal. Or there's a little valve and it can tell the valve to open so that some ointment can go on your wound.
What kinds of wounds are we talking about that these smart bandages would be used for?
They probably would not be used for the simple you cut yourself while cooking kind of thing. If it's a little cut, if you lopped your finger off, maybe actually that would be useful. They would really be used more for major kinds of wounds. For example, you know, surgical wounds or wounds from trauma. Or, and this is a huge problem in the United States, it's very costly both in terms of money and in terms of lives, like diabetic foot ulcers. A lot of people who have diabetes end up with these horrible ulcers that are hard to treat. They can go from looking okay to being, you know, at death's door quite quickly because these wounds get infected.
How far along are these smart bandages?
So this is the future. This is not happening now. These are being designed. They're being tried out in animals. They're being tried out in humans. So these aren't for sale or being used right now in a commercial sense. Also, the companies that develop these need to know that they'll be able to make money off of them. Right now, there isn't sort of a Medicare line item for an electronic bandage that gives a zap of electricity or whatever. So they need to know that there's a way for them to bill for these, to make money for these.
So how many more years until this happens?
We're talking years and years.
That's Elizabeth Cohen, who wrote about smart bandages for the Wall Street Journal. Coming up, space could be the next frontier of warfare. We'll find out what the U.S. military is doing to prepare after the break.
AI may be the most important new computer technology ever, but AI needs a lot of processing speed, and that gets expensive fast. Upgrade to the next generation of the cloud, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is the single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. Do more and spend less, like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic. Take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/wallstreet. oracle.com/wallstreet.
Satellites and other space assets have long faced threats from the ground, including missile attacks. But now they are going to have to contend with orbital risks, too. Pentagon officials have been opening up about these potential threats and taking steps to prepare the military for them. WSJ reporter Doug Cameron, who covers the global aerospace and defense industry, is here to talk about this. Doug, Pentagon officials have been talking more publicly about the weapons that hostile nations might use in space to engage in warfare. What are they saying?
You have to remember that there's two reasons why they're doing this. One is to show that there's a deterrent, that the U.S. is both aware of what potential adversaries are up to and is also able to do something about it. Just as we've deterred nuclear weapons for 50, 60 years by showing that we have them too, the U.S. is doing the same thing with space. The second reason, of course, for more publicity these days is funding. The Space Force, since it was created in 2019, has enjoyed successive years of larger funding. The fiscal 25 budget, which was recently released, actually is a small cut in the Space Force budget. And we've seen this playbook before when the military is looking for a bit more money for some particular weapons or whatever, that you up the threat level to try and encourage Congress to put a little bit more money your way.
What kinds of weapons technology is the Pentagon talking about?
Technology has moved on, and as you said before, you could always shoot missiles from the ground. Having some assets that can disable either US or allied assets in space can be more targeted than a missile, which frankly can miss. Technology has moved on, and instead of things that just go bang, electronic warfare, which is the fancy term for jamming, so satellites that can move close and jam another satellite, and then even things like a grabber arm, which could come up close to a satellite and push it out of orbit or even grab it and disable it that way. That's the sort of thing they're talking about. Not quite yet the realm of space lasers. Usually for technology reasons, you needed a lot of power and fuel to do that. But jamming and, basically bumping things in space.
And Doug, where is the Pentagon saying these potential threats are coming from?
Well, Russia and China, the pacing threats, as the Pentagon puts it, the jamming, the blocking communications both within space and from satellites to and from the ground, that is certainly something that's happening now. We've seen the Chinese deploy a satellite with a kind of grabbing arm. Now, this is where things get blurry because commercial companies want satellites with grabbing arms and other tools as well so they can be serviced while they're in orbit. So the suspicion is that some of these satellites with added features in space are not just there for maintenance, that they perhaps could be used as weapons or other offensive purposes. The latest one we've read about a lot, even though it's been up there for a couple of years, is the idea of Russia starting to test technology where they could have some sort of nuclear device actually in space as opposed to shooting something from the ground to potentially disrupt or frankly blow up a large number of satellites, also potentially their own satellites.
What have China and Russia said in response to this?
They have said on the nuclear side that everyone's abiding by a treaty that dates from the early 1960s, that you basically won't put nuclear weapons in space. In terms of other technologies, be they jamming or communications or microwaves, things like that, the usual response is that these are for scientific and testing purposes, and certainly that they are not looking to weaponize space. Now, the US has kind of said the same, that it's not us, it's you. We also have to remember that this is very high technology and it's very highly classified, so you're only just starting to peek behind the curtain right now.
What do we know about what is going on behind that curtain? I mean, what is the Space Force, this newest military branch, doing to prepare for these scenarios?
What is being done right now is to actually train the Guardians, as the members of the Space Force are called, to contend with any of the actual or potential threats. And that involves training them on how to best move U.S. satellites in space, to move them out of harm's way, and potentially on the offensive side, to perhaps move any U.S. capabilities, which again aren't usually disclosed, towards enemies' own satellites. So it's very much the early innings now. Learn what to do, and then once we have the technology to actually affect change in space, then we'll be able to use it.
Finally, how is the military working with private industry?
They want them. The military definitely wants commercial technology, because a lot of the funding that's gone into the commercial side is with a view to things many years down the line. A good example is asteroid mining. We're not about to mine asteroids anytime soon, but that's another area where you would need a satellite that can be maneuvered, that can be refueled, so it can go about its job. So they call it dual use, and any way the military feels they can leverage some of that technology, then they want to have a piece of that.
That was our reporter, Doug Cameron. And that's it for Tech News Briefing. Today's show was produced by Julie Chang with supervising producer Catherine Millsop. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. We'll be back this afternoon with TNB Tech Minute. Thanks for listening.